Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I usually don't root when it comes to sports. I'm a journalist, right? I'm not supposed to root. I'm not supposed to pick a side. I'm not supposed to have a dog in the fight, so to speak. That's up to you. That's your thing as a fan watching games. It used to be my thing. And maybe being a journalist, radio show host, sports columnist, maybe it's ruined things for me as a sports fan. But when it comes to the NBA playoffs, when the NBA playoffs are not happening here in Portland, and that's been most of the last 15 years, I am allowed to pick a dog in the fight because I'm kind of just watching from afar. And I had that experience last night in watching Boston and the Wizards. And now we're down to the final four in the NBA playoffs, and I'm trying to find out and figure out who I'm supposed to be rooting for in these playoffs. Am I supposed to be pulling for the Boston Celtics because they're an underdog faced with the unenviable task of trying to beat LeBron James? Am I supposed to root for Boston because I'm not supposed to root for LeBron because I don't like LeBron? Am I supposed to hate him? If you're not from Cleveland, you don't like LeBron, right? Am I supposed to root for the Spurs because Greg Popovich is angry and feels like they've been wronged? You heard his rant after Zaza Pachulia came down underneath Kawhi Leonard in game one of that playoff series, shifted certainly game one and maybe the entire series. Pop went ballistic.
He would have played and they'd ended up winning. I go get dinner, have a glass of wine, wake up the next day, go to practice, and move on. But this is crap. And because he's got this history, it can't just be, oh, it was inadvertent. He didn't have intent. Who gives a damn about what his intent was? You ever hear of manslaughter? You still go to jail, I think, when you're texting and you end up killing somebody. But you might not have intended to do that. All I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. And the history there exacerbates the whole situation and makes me very, very angry. But I'm still open to follow-ups.
Greg Popovich, coach of the Spurs. Does that make him endearing or does that turn you off, obnoxious? So who are you rooting for in the Eastern Conference? Who are you rooting for in the West? If you are somebody who wants to see the best two teams play, maybe you're rooting for Cleveland and Golden State because you want that final. Maybe you're rooting for Cleveland more than Golden State because of the way the Warriors were built. Or maybe you're looking at last year and you say, you know, LeBron winning it. The Warriors probably should have won it if Draymond Green plays in Game 5 and isn't suspended. The officiating cost them the series. A lot of people looking at that. So who's your dog in this NBA playoffs Final Four? Who are you rooting for? Who is the most likable team? And certainly it's probably not the Warriors or the Celtics. But you're looking at the Spurs, who are playing shorthanded without Tony Parker and maybe without Kawhi Leonard for some time. And you're looking at the Boston Celtics, who are a nice story, but are they capable of giving the Cleveland Cavaliers any kind of trouble? 417-7575 in the 503 area code. You tell me who you're rooting for. We got great guests today. Mel Renfro, Super Bowl champion two times with the Dallas Cowboys, former Oregon Duck legend, 10-time Pro Bowler, Pro Football Hall of Famer, will be with us at 12:30. Be here for that guest. But you tell me, who am I supposed to be rooting for? Who are you rooting for in these NBA playoffs? Because the playoffs are just about to start. Forget the early rounds. And forget the players who are out tweeting, saying things like, oh, I've made the playoffs every year that I've been with the team. Saw that yesterday on Twitter from Damian Lillard. Every year except my rookie year, I made the playoffs. I don't know if he knows this, but like more than half the teams in the NBA make the playoffs. So making the playoffs is not like, you know, I guess that's something you should be proud of, kind of. But surviving and advancing, making a conference final, that's something I think where you can puff your chest up and be like, hey, I got to a conference final. I'll give you that. It's a Final Four in the NBA. Who am I rooting for? Tell me who you're rooting for. Make a case for what is the most likable team or the most unlikable team. I think this will divide us as an audience. 503-417-7575 is the number. Because I think on one hand that you've got LeBron, who's a polarizing figure by himself. And LeBron is on one side of this bracket and he's rested. And there's been all this talk about, you know, LeBron James, and how much are they looking over at the Warriors? How much are they worried about the Warriors getting rest in the series? I think that's nonsense. If you are a Cleveland fan, you know that LeBron James isn't worried about anybody. He's only worried about himself. And I think if you've got an opportunity to see LeBron late in games, he's doing things behind the three-point line this year that he hasn't done at a high level in the past.
Eight now shows on the shot clock. LeBron heads to his right. Now back to his left. Four to shoot. Down to two. LeBron lines up a three. Fires a three. And nails a three. Oh, my. Not only did LeBron eat the entire shot clock, he hits the three over Tucker and gives the Cavaliers a 106-95 lead.
Because here's what Cleveland's doing offensively. They're coming down the court. They're putting four big guys that can shoot the three, and Channing Frye being one of them, Kyle Korver another. And they are letting LeBron attack the paint, and then if you don't have a defender that can defend him one-on-one, which most teams don't, then he's just kicking out for a wide-open three-pointer for one of these good three-point shooters. LeBron, I find him difficult to like. I find him difficult to root for the same reason that I don't root for the Dallas Cowboys and I don't root for the Yankees. He's just tough. He's tough to root for. How about Boston in that same bracket? Can you really root for a team that you know doesn't have a prayer? And I guess if you're watching the Eastern Conference Finals, you'll say that what Boston has done defies sort of the logic of what we, you know, adult logic. Because in elementary school or on the playground or in youth sports, we will often see, hey, these guys said this about you matter. I know my 14-year-old who plays volleyball tends to play with more aggression and better when she's playing against kids she knows versus kids she doesn't know. I don't know what that's about. I've asked her. I said, what's that about? Why do you get a little? Because it's a comfort thing. She's used to competing. She knows these people. She competes against them. She gets a little snarl. And I like that. But the Boston Celtics have found another gear in the playoffs. And it's related to the tragedy that has happened in Isaiah Thomas's family. That Isaiah Thomas has, you know, had this tragedy where his sister is killed in an automobile accident, and the Celtics have just rallied around it, and the Celtics have just risen to another level. And I felt all along in the Eastern Conference semifinal with the Washington Wizards that the Wizards probably presented a better matchup for Cleveland. A more favorable series for everybody to watch, because I think Bradley Beal and John Wall, that combination would have given Cleveland at least something to have to worry about and think about. The Celtics, all the Celtics have are emotion, a couple of undersized players, Kelly Olynyk, who played terrific against the Washington Wizards last night. The Celtics are going to have to play fast and try to make Cleveland uncomfortable by playing fast, and that's it. That's all you have there. Are the Celtics a team that you can root for? You tell me who you're rooting for and who I should be rooting for. 503 area code 417-7575. In the Western Conference, can you root for the Warriors? Can you really get behind a team that was built in that way that people in the state of Oregon and Portland in particular sort of look at and go, man, this is why the NBA stinks. Because small market teams that don't get lucky in the lottery, that don't have something different like Greg Popovich or whatever, they can't do what the Golden State Warriors did in acquiring Kevin Durant. They can't build a franchise that way. Doesn't happen in places like Oklahoma City, Portland, Sacramento. Doesn't happen in Milwaukee. Can you really root for the evil empire, so to speak? Because if you rooted against the Miami Heat, I don't know how you could root for the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry's a likable player. Draymond Green, if he's on your side, is extremely likable. Kevin Durant, I mean, how can you not root for that guy, right? Except when you see the way that this team was assembled. Are the Warriors a team that's worth rooting for? Or is there a likable entity that you find in there? Meanwhile, you got the Spurs, who are the epitome of class, right? Five NBA championships, Tim Duncan, David Robinson in their rearview mirror, Greg Popovich. Maybe you root for the Spurs because you think the Spurs are the best opportunity that the NBA has to show a super team like the Warriors that that's not how you do it. And the Spurs, when they had Kawhi Leonard healthy in game one, looked capable of putting the Warriors out of this thing. And I thought it was interesting. And if there's any rubbernecking going on by Cleveland, they had to be looking over at the Warriors-Spurs series and go, whoa, they couldn't defend Kawhi Leonard. They were having trouble with LaMarcus Aldridge. Is it possible that that is the secret to beating the Golden State Warriors? Right up until that injury, which is why Greg Popovich was so upset. Now, I don't happen to agree with Pop. I think he's doing a little bit of showboating and a little bit of grandstanding for the officials in Game 2. I think he's tired of seeing defenders who come underneath good three-point shooters and will plant their feet there intentionally, letting the shooter come down on their foot. But what I saw from Zaza Pachulia was just a big man who's not comfortable on the perimeter trying to get up and defend Kawhi Leonard. And if you watch it closely, I've looked at that replay probably 15 times. Pachulia's doing something that only a big man would do on the perimeter. He's turning to block the guy out on the three-point shot. That's a big man move from inside the paint. Pachulia trying to block out Kawhi Leonard. So he's kind of turning into him as he goes underneath him. And I think Greg Popovich, when he talks about not intent or manslaughter or whatever, I think he's really talking about, hey, officials, protect my guys throughout the rest of this series. We'll go out to the phone lines. We've got one line open at 503-417-7575. Paul is in Vancouver. Paul, who are you rooting for?
Cleveland, all the way.
How so?
So, well, I mean, who can defend LeBron with Golden State and LeBron, Cleveland Cavaliers? They post up. You got Draymond, but he's going to be on Love. And you're going to ask Durant to D up on LeBron James, and he just can't do it. He's not physical.
Yeah,
what happens is he gets dominated, and he posts out to Irving or any of his teammates, and LeBron will probably get like 25 a game, but the rest of his team's going to be great.
I think what we saw the Warriors do early in the series last year, and by the way, I mentioned earlier that Cleveland is not worried about the Golden State Warriors. I think the Warriors are worried about Cleveland. I think what happened last year in the NBA playoff, in the NBA finals, was you saw a Cleveland team that was rested entering the finals, that had very quickly moved through the early rounds of the playoffs, playing a Warriors team that had a little more trouble, had Steph Curry with the knee injury, had a little more wear and tear and a little few more miles on their players. They got into that series, and I think by the end of the series, Cleveland had fresher legs, and then Draymond Green sitting in Game 5 with the suspension was an absolute difference maker. I think the Warriors win the NBA playoffs and win the finals if Draymond Green plays. So I think the Warriors this year in the playoffs, I can feel it. You can feel it in that Blazers series. You can feel it in the Utah series. The Warriors came in and said, we need to move through this quickly. And I think they're looking over at Cleveland going, we're not going to let those guys have the advantage of all that rest that we didn't have before. I don't know if LeBron by himself is enough to beat the Warriors in a 7-game series. We saw it last year. And I wonder, too, can you really root for LeBron? I mean, if you're not somebody who is a Cleveland fan all the way, do you sit back and have a great appreciation for what LeBron's doing? Or do you sit back and have an appreciation for the way that the Warriors built a super team? I think there's probably more respect and admiration in rooting for LeBron than there is for rooting for the Warriors. And I say that being a guy who grew up in the Bay Area and watched the Warriors toil, watched them struggle. Joe Barry Carroll, Al Addles. Warriors should have had Patrick Ewing in the 85 draft. Instead, they got screwed. They got Chris Mullin. I think about it every draft lottery day. Yeah, today. NBA draft lottery. So I look at that and I go, can I really join the faction of people who go, gosh, what the Warriors are doing is so beautiful. It was to me, it was beautiful to me until they added Durant. And when they added Kevin Durant, I think he's a remarkable player. I kind of went, gosh, can I pull for this? Because it kind of represents everything that I've been against all along as a fan of a toiling franchise. I look around and I go, oh, look at the Celtics putting getting Kevin Garnett and putting that thing together. Oh, look at Miami. LeBron goes to South Beach. The Golden State Warriors are now that team. So would you rather root for LeBron and just say, I'm rooting for a sensational talent, even though he's a bit of a bully on the court, or are you rooting for the Warriors? I think you got a problem there in the finals. In the draft lottery, oh, the Lakers today. It's going to be remarkable to see what happens with this ping pong ball. The Lakers finished the regular season with 26 wins. That's third worst behind the Suns and the Brooklyn Nets. That gives them the third best odds of landing the number one pick. And they have a 46.9% chance that their pick will stay in the top three. The problem is, if their pick falls below the top three, the 76ers get it. It's unprotected. And in a ripple effect that will destroy the Lakers, they would also lose their 2019 first-round pick to Orlando if they fall out of the top three. So what I'm saying is there's a 53.1% chance that the Lakers get hosed today, which would mean Lonzo Ball doesn't go to the Lakers. You could talk about trade, but you got to, and I think they got to get into the top two to get Lonzo. So if you are Phoenix and Brooklyn, you're up against the Lakers here. So if you are a Blazer fan or a fan of any other team in the NBA except the Lakers, today becomes really interesting, an interesting day to root against the Lakers rebuild. And in a weird way, to root against LeVar Ball, who is putting on a clinic for parents of what not to do as a parent when it comes to your kid. So a busy week there when it comes to the NBA draft lottery. We'll have those draft positions solidified. The Blazers sitting on three picks. A lot of eyes on the Lakers today and those ping pong balls. And I will never forget when Greg Oden became, you know, the foreseeable pick in the 2007 draft. Do you know the ripple effect of that thing? Well, this radio station would not exist. This radio show might not exist if Greg Oden and the Blazers had not ended up with the number one overall pick in the 2007 draft. The anniversary of this radio show and this station that I work for coincides with the Blazers getting that pick. There was a lot of enthusiasm. There was a lot of excitement. People said, we need another sports station. We need another sports show. So, yes, the NBA draft lottery matters, and I'll root against the Lakers today. Mel Renfro, Pro Football Hall of Famer. He's next.
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
We're going to talk college football recruiting later in the show. Plus more on parenting, or how not to parent, by LeVar Ball. Mel Renfro, former Oregon Duck, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Dallas Cowboy, frequent guest on this show, joins us. How are you, sir?
Doing great. How are you?
Where are you today?
Dallas, Texas.
Do you miss the Northwest, or once you leave and you get sunny skies, do you go, it was a nice time, but I'll take the sunshine?
No, I really miss Portland. I miss being there. I remember all the great times I had there, and all of my relatives and friends are still up there, and I love the West Coast.
When you come back to Portland, you probably, and for people who don't know, Mel went to Jefferson High School, attended the University of Oregon. But when you come back to Portland, how different does it feel, or does it feel the same to you when you get back?
No, it's not the same place at all. I drive through my old neighborhood, and it's just incredibly different than what it used to be. It's I guess they call it regentrification. There are a lot of townhomes and large buildings, and where there were just neighborhoods and small neighborhoods. But now it's changed a great deal. But I still love going out there and checking it out and visiting with family and friends.
Everybody talks about the 1958 team in Oregon high school history. You had yourself at halfback. You had Terry Baker. You had Mickey Hergert. You had your brother Ray. You guys must have had a lot of fun at practice.
No question about that. With Coach Tom DeSilvia, he was like a father figure to all of us, and it was like Fenlot football.
Yeah.
We had a great time. We were about 50 or 60 deep, six teams, and we just had fun all the time. Great guy.
How much fun was that to have your brother there with you and have that experience?
Well, I really looked up to Ray. I looked up to all my brothers, Dallas and Jimmy, who preceded us in the early 50s. So I was looking forward to going to Jeff and being a part of that family up there. It was great because it was a neighborhood thing, and we had such great talent. It was just, good to be a part of it.
We're talking to Mel Renfro, Pro Football Hall of Famer. You go to college at the University of Oregon. You're playing both ways. I know in the NFL you end up on defense and you end up a Hall of Famer, so it's hard to argue with that. But did you miss playing offense?
No, I really didn't, because my rookie year, I led the league in kickoffs and punt returns, and
yeah,
intercepted seven passes. I had my hands on the ball quite a bit, and playing full time special teams and defense, gave me a full plate. So I have no regrets as far as playing defense. It kind of prolonged my career, I think, because on offense with the getting hit so much, I wouldn't have lasted quite as long.
Everybody knows that, you'd played at Oregon and you played at a high level. You were an All-American. Everybody talks about you in track and field. I was reading recently about the game that you guys played against Rice at Houston in 1962. You played both ways. Rice Stadium had been a whites-only facility prior to the visit there. You had your family there. What was it like to play in that place and then to get a great ovation from that crowd?
It was one of those lifetime memorable things that, you never forget. I remember it like it was yesterday. And, I had never seen my grandfather. He was sitting in the stands right behind our bench, on the 40, 50-yard line. About 30 of my relatives were in there, and I guess the adrenaline, I was so pumped about that, and like I said, we went both ways, and it was a warm night, and it wasn't easy, but, I guess the Spirit of God was in me and enabled me to do some things that I probably ordinarily would not have been able to do.
Were you aware that it had been a whites-only facility at that time, or were you nervous that day?
Well, not nervous about that, because we were forewarned about what the situation was and how to deal with it. Just when I found out that my parents, my grandfolks, my relatives were there, it really relaxed me. And, when the game was over and those students ran up to me and they were tearing pieces of their clothes off and handing it to me, I don't know what that was all about, but they were so kind and so appreciative of what I did that night. Like I said, it was just something that was incredible and something that I'll cherish forever.
It surprised me that in that era, in 1962, that it had been a whites-only facility prior to the visit that you guys had, because Jackie Robinson was 15 years earlier to 17 years earlier.
Right. It was just the sign of those times. And, incredibly, when I came to Dallas in 64, there was quite a bit of that. Not a lot, but there was, and we were directed in certain places to go and things not to do. So, that's just the way it was then. And just thankfully that things have changed tremendously since then, and you see what's happening today, and you know, there seem to be not those type of problems anymore.
Oregon Duck legend Mel Renfro is with us, two-time Super Bowl champion with the Dallas Cowboys. Who did you root for as a kid?
The Olympic sprinter, 33.
Jesse Owens?
Jesse Owens.
Yeah.
He visited Portland when I was in high school. And he was spoke at a luncheon in one of the places in Portland. And I saw him, and, you know, I just became an incredible fan of his. Such a quiet guy and soft-spoken, and I really admired him. And also Jim Brown.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Brown, growing up in high school, watching him on the Sundays, and then later on, not ever thinking I would be playing pro football, to be able to play against him for several years and play with him at Pro Bowls and get to know him. He's a great friend till this day, and you know, people like that just give you such great memories.
Mel Renfro with us. Tom Landry, you know, he makes the decision to put you on defense. What was it like to play for Landry?
It was good. One thing about Landry, he wasn't the coach that was going to kid and joke with you. Yeah, he was all about X's and O's and football and perfection. But you know, he was a tough taskmaster for most of the time. Matter of fact, my first 3 or 4 years, he wasn't the guy that you would like, but. You know, when we started winning games and there was a great atmosphere and you got to know your teammates and your teammates' family and you know, he had a great influence, I think, on all the players because of his strong Christian faith. And, you know, he coached and taught the game both offensively and defensively based on Scripture. And I didn't really realize it till, you know, later in life when I became a Christian and was reading the Bible, and I saw Tom Landry's name all over the Bible, and you know, he made a lot of us better human beings after we left the game.
When you get elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, correct me if I'm wrong, did Landry present you?
Yes.
Why'd you pick him?
Yes. You know, it was between Coach Landry and Tom DeSilvia.
Yeah.
But I spent 14 years playing for Tom, and he knew me probably better than anybody else. And he just seemed the ideal guy to choose. There were several other Hall of Famers that went in that used Coach Landry, and I said, well, why not? So I asked him, and without a doubt, he accepted immediately.
What do you think now of the rules when you watch an NFL game? Because they won't let the defensive backs touch the offensive players. It's practically a flag every time.
I don't understand the game anymore. You know, the guys are big, they're fast, they're specialized. Like you say, the rules are so different, and the formations multiple and the different types of defenses. I enjoy the game. You know, football is football. You know, you got to score and you got to stop them from scoring, but. I love watching the game, but I really don't understand. I'm always asking myself during the game, what in the heck was that? And why would they do that? And what? So it's a puzzle. But like I say, you know, it's just like everything in life changes, and there's no difference in football. It's just a different. And, you know, and the money. Oh, God, the money is so incredibly stupid to me. I mean, not stupid, but when I look at guys that are making more in 1 year, or 10 times more in one year than I made in 14 years. And I say, wow, that's a... You know, I'm glad that they're getting it, and I just hope that they appreciate it, and, you know, that they don't be foolish with it, which some of them are.
I don't know that how they could appreciate it, because I think, like, if we went back and we gave you that money that you would have earned in today's dollars, you probably would have the appreciation now. But I don't know when you give it to, like, a 23-year-old kid if he understands, like, you know. Even remember when Deion Sanders came on the scene and he was a $1 million guy, and I thought everyone was comparing him to you, and I thought, no, Mel Renfro was much more physical than Deion Sanders.
I often joke that, you know, he called himself primetime. He was primetime, but Mel Renfro was full-time. I went 60 minutes, that was it. But, you know, it's just like I say, it's a sign of the times. Things change, and, you know, you hope the best for everybody, and you want them to get whatever they can get.
You know, you have that perspective with Terry Baker from high school. He goes to Oregon State. He wins the 62 Heisman Trophy. What made Terry Baker good?
Well, his versatility. He's very smart, very mobile, and he just pinpoint passer. I think my 3 years with him, and we didn't throw very much, but he maybe thrown to me 50, 60 times during that time. But he never overthrew me. I dropped one pass, and I was so, you know, mortified by it that it never happened again. Dropped one pass in 3 years with him. But, you know, he just intelligent and a leader and just a great guy, great friend to this day.
He told a great story about how different recruiting was in that era, and he had been given use of a car during one recruiting visit, took it kind of on a joyride, and there were different times without the regulations they have today. What do you remember about being recruited, and was it Oregon all the way for you, or did anybody else get in the picture?
Oh, it was Oregon State all the way. I was recruited. I got mostly letters, and there's some alums from schools across the country that came by and visited and chit-chatted a little bit. But I had always said, well, I'm going to Oregon State, and based mainly because of Terry Baker. It was 2 weeks before it was time to report to school. And, of course, Oregon recruited me a lot, too. But I had made the decision to go to Oregon State. Because, you know, Bill Bowerman and Casanova were great coaches, and I knew that. But, you know, I wanted to go where Terry Baker was. But my dad came up to me and said, Melvin, you're going to Oregon. I said, okay, Dad. You know, that's what you, your decision, that's where you want me to go. So I committed to Oregon, and that's what happened.
And that's the story. That's right. You told this story before. That's the story where he showed up with the 57 Chevy and it was, hey, maybe that had something to do with it, maybe it didn't.
Yeah, many years later, you know, I was asked that, and I said, you know, that never even came to mind. But in thinking back, my dad ended up with a car, and I also ended up my senior year in high school with a car. But, yeah, back then, it didn't faze me. I just said, wow, you know, good. So let it be.
And you know what? And you think about, you know, what nowadays, what the teams make off the talent, the players in college, and the regulations are so tight now that the kids can hardly eat or take any kind of extra benefit without somebody flagging it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's unfair. The colleges, the institutions make a tremendous amount of money on the athletes. And they don't get any of it, at least not, you know, on the table. But I don't know how you correct that. It's just something that the way it is and probably will always be that way.
I had you on the show a few years ago, and right after somebody emailed me and they said, you don't know this, but Mel worked at Sears briefly in the 1970s down on Grand Avenue. He was in the appliance department, and he was hardworking, and he always had a good story and a smile for you. Do you remember those days?
Well, actually, that was not me.
Well, there you go.
I've had people come up and tell me that they knew me and we were friends, and they're 20 years older than me. But you know, I can see where they would make a mistake. The amount of years that's gone by, but that was my brother Jimmy.
Yeah. Okay.
My brother Jimmy. Jimmy worked in the Sears appliance department for forever. I think he retired from there. And I used to go in there and visit him a lot because it was right in the neighborhood. And I can understand why someone would make that mistake. But, no, that was my brother Jimmy. I didn't work in Sears.
It's funny because I just found the email, and it says, I will never forget him. And I want to write the guy back, go, you know what? It wasn't Mel. We've got Mel Renfro on the show, former Oregon Duck, former Dallas Cowboy. When you see the facilities at Oregon compared to what you played in, compared to even the NFL, what do you think?
Incredible. Incredible. I remember the Cowboy facility when I played, and the practice facility, the clubhouse, and the football field. It almost doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I loved Matt Court. You know, I loved that old gymnasium. You know, I loved the track. Back in those days, to me, it was great. But now it's just incredible, and it far exceeds some of the pro facilities these days. And you know, it's wonderful that with the help of Phil Knight, they were able to do that, because it really helps the recruiting, and they draw a lot of incredible athletes up there because of the facilities.
I look at Willie Taggart's arrival. He's the first African-American head football coach at Oregon, and I think about how far even your story about being at Rice, where it was a white-only stadium, how far that things have come. Did you ever think back at Oregon at the time, like, it would take that long for the university to have a black head coach?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought it would happen a lot sooner than that. But, you know, when you have the success that Oregon has had in their athletic department, and you don't make changes easily, and there were African American coaches, but not head coaches. But you know, I think it's wonderful that it's finally happened, and I wish the coach the best and success in the coming future.
All right, Mel Renfro, we wish you the best. I appreciate you making time for us and our listeners.
Well, it's good to be on your show. It's uplifting, and I look forward to being in Portland in July.
All right, there he is, Mel Renfro. He's coming to Portland in July. You heard it here first. And love to get him part of the celebrity golf tournament. Gliss, get him to golf as a celebrity golfer in our BFT Foundation celebrity golf tournament. Be a lot of fun. I love that story, though. I have an email from a guy who says, I worked with him at Sears. I'll never forget him. And Mel's like, no, that was my brother. I love that. Mel Renfro, a treasure. He waited 19 years to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame after his retirement. And 2-time Super Bowl champion. He went to 4 Super Bowls, 10 Pro Bowls. 5 times he was an All-Pro. You know how it goes. Mel Renfro, one of the greatest Oregon Ducks ever. And he always makes time for us, and I appreciate having him on. If you want a podcast of that, you can grab it on SoundCloud or iTunes. We have Punch It Audio coming up. We're also going to talk recruiting in the 2 o'clock hour. You're going to want to be here in the 2 o'clock hour, because we're going to dive deep on recruiting. And I talked yesterday on the show about my tour of the facilities at Oregon State. I got a chance to walk through the facilities, see the locker room. We've got Greg Biggins, who covers recruiting on a national scale. He'll be joining us at 2 o'clock to talk about it. I want to know, What I sense has happened in the Pac-12, because Ray alluded to it, Oregon set the bar so high with the Taj Mahal, the cryo pools, the Brazilian hardwoods, the etched glass, the televisions that are inside the mirrors in the bathrooms of the football facility. They set the bar so high that I think the rest of the conference, 11 other schools, are scrambling around trying to have facilities that are just good enough where it can't be a negative. And for Oregon State, it was $48 million that they poured into the renovation and expansion of that locker room and the football facility, the Valley Football Center. And you know what? It's pretty damn nice. But we'll talk to Biggins about that coming up at 2 o'clock. Punch It Audio is coming up next. You're going to hear all the best sound from all around. You've got the bald-faced truth.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I got to say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Anybody following this story with James Harden and Moses Malone Jr.? Civil lawsuit seeking damages for Harden apparently is being accused of allegedly orchestrating a beating last summer in retaliation for a Facebook post that offended the Houston Rockets star. Apparently, Moses Malone Jr. posted on Facebook. Is he a millennial? What's he doing on Facebook? And James Harden allegedly orchestrated a beatdown for that and a robbery. And that's what Moses Malone Jr. said. Speaking of millennials, I had some problems with millennials this morning. And look, I've got enough enemies out there. I don't need to start a beef with the millennials. But I got to say, Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, who covers Oregon Ducks football, tweeted out this morning that he was having some avocado spread on his toast. And he said, millennials, anything is possible. See? And I warned him that the millennials were probably still asleep. The real millennials out there. And then, of course, a couple of the other millennials on Twitter, because they're all over Twitter, came at me and saying, hey, you're bald and, you know, you're unlikable and all this other stuff. And I lost interest after a little bit. But I don't think it's your fault, millennial. Everybody says that you got your hand out, you won't work hard, that you're lazy, that you're not motivated, that you're not willing to pay your dues. Everybody says that you don't have work ethic, you don't understand the value of a good handshake and looking somebody in the eye, that you got your head down all the time, that your eyes are in your phone, that you're more concerned about social media and your approval socially based on your likes or your retweets, that you're a scorekeeper on social media. Everybody says that you're lazy. Forgot where this was going. Everybody says that, you know, you don't have what it takes. You're not going to be the greatest generation. I don't hold that against you, millennial. What I do hold against you is things like avocado spread. See, because an avocado in its natural state is spreadable. Okay? I don't know if you've ever had an avocado, or if you just had avocado spread, or if you just have a guy who comes tableside to mix your avocado dip for you. But if you've ever seen an avocado, and a ripe avocado, and taking it in its natural state, it's pretty spreadable. Okay, so that's the thing that I hold against you. I don't think the fact that you want a shortcut, the fact that you don't understand paying your dues, I think that's more on society than it is you. Because we talked about it yesterday. I think that's about parenting. And I think as a society, we've done a piss poor job of parenting the millennials. By not having expectations for them, by not creating accountability, the millennials are all glaring at me, and by not fostering an atmosphere where we go, hey, this is the expectation, you meet it or you beat it. And so I think it's on the rest of us to fix that. I don't know where it's going. And I don't know who the millennials are going to complain about when they become older. When you're like mid-40s and you're a millennial and you're looking back, what is the next generation going to be? What are they going to be doing that ticks you off? Oh, they're not hardworking like us. We used to get up at 10 and get after it. We had to ride public transportation. That's what they'll say. Millennials, I'll take your phone calls if you want. Tell me what upsets you about being criticized. And if you're like me out there, I work with a lot of millennials. We have them as interns and production assistants, and there are exceptions to the rule. I think Alabama Adriana is an exception. She's smart. She's hardworking. She gets here early. You tell her something once, she figures it out. But that used to be normal. That's what we used to call just being normal. So the fact that she's normal makes her like, oh, she's a star, man. You tell her something once, she figures it out. I'm like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. That's what drives me crazy, is we've lowered the bar, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody. Because I'm walking around here going, you know what? If they can let themselves into the building, if you don't have to tell them the address, if you don't have to tell them every day, hey, this is what time you're supposed to be here tomorrow, then it's a success. I lower the bar just as much as anybody. The area code is 503-417-7575. Weigh in on that. Let's play some Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Fish Truth Headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Kelly Olynyk went crazy last night for Boston. Three-pointer late in the fourth quarter. Punch it.
Celtics look to take advantage there. Thomas, the jab step. Olynyk, a three. Oh, Kelly Olynyk! The game of his life!
He had 26 for the Celtics in Game 7. By the way, he had a total of 26 points in his previous three games combined. He also outscored John Wall 14-zip in the fourth quarter of Game 7. That's like what the Patriots did to the Falcons. Well, let's not go there. NBA draft lottery tonight. Celtics are a major player in the top draft for the second straight year. Here's last year's reveal at the draft lottery. Punch it.
Three. The Boston Celtics have won the third pick in the 2016 NBA draft. And that concludes the 2016 draft lottery. Best of luck to you at the NBA draft in June.
The weird thing this year is the Celtics, who are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, have the best odds of getting the number one pick, 25% chance. This happened by way of the Brooklyn Nets, who did something 4 years ago that has hurt them badly. They traded Gerald Wallace, Chris Humphries, Marshawn Brooks, Chris Joseph, Keith Bogans, and unprotected first-round picks in 2014, 16, and 18 to the Celtics. In return, they got Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. They got an old-time parade. Old-timers game in exchange for a future. When it comes to a backup quarterback for the Seahawks, Pete Carroll says he has not narrowed that search yet. Punch it.
A couple guys who fit that mold who are out there still as free agents. I mean, Kaepernick, RG3, both come to mind. Would those be names you would consider?
We're looking at everybody, really. We are. We really are. We're looking. We've been tracking everything that's going on, and we have, you know, we've got cap and roster issues and stuff like that that we're still trying to make sure that we manage properly. But just quite frankly, yes, we are looking at all those guys.
Colin Kaepernick and RG3, there's some potential there. They've got their star quarterback, Russell Wilson, in a long-term deal. He's 28, but we saw him last year. The biggest problem for the Seahawks was protecting Russell Wilson last year. From just about the season opener, if I remember correctly, till the end of the season, it was knees, ankles, hobbling, wobbling, and Russell Wilson just fighting through it. Seahawks very disappointed after their backup quarterback, Trevon Boykin, was arrested in March. So, yes, they're looking at Colin Kaepernick. They're looking at Robert Griffin III. I kind of like Colin Kaepernick with those two options. In a Seattle system where he's asked to just be a relief pitcher, would that work? Would that work for you, Seahawk fan? Kyle Seager, looking to put the Mariners in front. Punch it.
And the 0-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Into the gap in right center field. Davis going back. Goodbye, baseball. Kyle Seager with his third home run of the season.
Third home run of the season, the bottom of the eighth inning. And Cruz and Seager power the Mariners to a 6-5 win over the Athletics. It's going to be all right. Love that crack of the bat. Did you hear that crack of the bat? That's what we love about baseball. Here's a grand slam. Astros have the best record in baseball, by the way. Punch it.
And that's driven pretty deep to left field. Ozuna is going back, looking up. See you later! A grand slam for Yuli Gurriel. And the Astros take a 4-1 lead. Second grand slam in as many days for the Astros.
Yuli with a grand slam. You know what's bothering me about the Astros? Not that they're playing so well. I think they ripped their uniforms off from the San Francisco Giants. I don't know if you've seen the uniform that the Houston Astros wore last night. It looks a lot like the Giants' colors. The Astros, I liked them better when they had those Neapolitan-looking crummy jerseys that Nolan Ryan had to wear. J.R. Richard. Kind of that rainbow of non-rainbow colors going up the front of that uniform. That was a bad uniform. But now they're emulating the Giants, and they're playing a lot like the Giants. Do you remember Ben Johnson, the sprinter, the Canadian sprinter, 88 gold medal? Doping scandal. He had to give back his gold medal. Well, he's got a new advertisement out. He's doing an endorsement for an app that makes light of his doping past. Punch it.
This is Ben Johnson, 88 games, 100 meter gold medalist.
Hi, I am Ben Johnson, 88 games, 100 meter gold medalist.
When it comes to performance enhancement, Ben really knows his stuff, which is why he's happy to endorse Sportsbet's new juiced up Android app.
It's new.
This thing is a hit with performance enhancement experts all over the world.
Everyone's on it.
Take your Shin Sportsbet app, sure, Fei Chang Kuai.
It's like you say. Very powerful stuff.
It's been secretly developed to deliver lightning-fast results.
It tested positive for speed and power again and again.
With scientific stuff injected into its back end.
Oh, good Lord. The company that put this out there is not apologizing for it. Meanwhile, Australia's anti-doping authority is criticizing the ad, and their federal sports minister, Greg Hunt, says it's utterly inappropriate. The anti-doping authority has come out saying it does not condone the message sent in the advertisement. It makes light of performance-enhancing drugs in sports, and it sends the wrong message. I think everybody just needs to lighten up. Ben Johnson's just trying to make a buck. Didn't work out for him because he cheated. I just remember that people used to ask the question after, in 1988, I think the running joke after he tested positive was, "What does Ben Johnson and a cheetah have in common?" And the answer was, "They're both cheetahs." It's as good as I got right now. Let's go out to the phone lines. Josh in Northeast is calling in about the Seahawks. What's up, Josh?
All right. So can we? I mean, number one, I'm not a Seahawks fan, and I'm especially not a Pete Carroll fan. But as crazy as it might be, can they really sign Colin Kaepernick of all people? I mean, he doesn't do mechanics. He does his own thing. Yes, maybe he's good in the locker room, but he doesn't. You know, he's not doing so hot on the field.
Here's the thing, though, and here's why I think it works for Seattle. The first thing I did is I don't care what the pundits say. I don't care what fans think about Kaepernick to the Seahawks. What I care about is how does he fit in that locker room? Michael Bennett comes out immediately after this, and he's talking to John Clayton in Seattle, and he says he thinks it would be great for him. You think that this is a locker room that I think would embrace him. And, you know, Carroll's saying, hey, we're looking at everybody, but the bottom line is, if Colin Kaepernick can play, I don't think he's as big a distraction with Pete Carroll's team that he is with some other teams. In San Francisco, it was a major distraction. But I think when you talk about locker room culture, you have a guy like Michael Bennett in the Seahawks locker room, who's used to being the distraction himself, going, hey, you know what? This would be great for the locker room. And I think you have a coach like Pete Carroll, who really is a player's coach. I mean, we all saw what the Seahawks did in response to Kaepernick sitting during the national anthem. I don't think it's as big a distraction in that Seahawks locker room as it would be in other places. And I want to believe that Colin Kaepernick could still play. Like, I want to believe that he didn't forget how to play football, that he was just with a bad 49ers team running for his life. I want to think the same things about RG3. But again, what are they asking you to do as the backup quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks? You're asked to stand in relief of a very durable guy who had a year last year where, you know, he was banged up a lot and had to play. So, yeah, they're looking for somebody else. Just take some snaps. Take some pressure off of Russell Wilson. The salary cap issues will be ultimately the thing that they blame. When it comes down to it, would you take Colin Kaepernick on your team? It makes too much sense. And a lot of people are saying that, hey, look, this has just been leaked out there to help Kaepernick. And by the way, weren't the Seahawks the one team that Kaepernick really struggled against? aside from running the football a little bit, remember the 2014 NFC Championship game? He put up, he had 100-plus rushing yards. And if he hasn't thrown that pass to Crabtree, like shorted it a little bit, maybe the Niners go to the Super Bowl. Probably do. I was there. But by the way, Kaepernick, beginning of the offseason, his agent said $10 million salary, then it was $5 million, and now people are saying he would probably take whatever the market bears. Colin Kaepernick, I'd like to see him play again. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I noticed the millennials are silent on the issue. Gliss is the producer of this show. Gliss, do you consider yourself, are you a millennial or are you a millennial hater? You have to deal with them all the time.
I believe technically I'm right on the fringe of being a millennial. I, however, do not identify as millennial.
Yeah, I saw you shaking your head.
Yeah, I got three kids. I feel like I'm too close to the edge to really identify myself as a millennial.
All right, just making sure. I just want to know if I have some support in the room. We got millennials everywhere else. If you are somebody out there that has to hire millennials, I feel for you. And that's the number one question when I talk to business owners. I'm like, how do you do it? How do you weed through? And they're saying we're doing more research on this generation to try to find out, more about what it is that motivates these guys and who are they. And millennials, I found, are very cause-driven. Like, they're very, like, more prone to be protesters than maybe my generation. More prone to maybe take up a cause that is political or social. And I don't even know if they can agree on what their message is. They have one. 503-417-7575. Tell me how you do it if you deal with millennials on a daily basis. I have that coming for me because I tell people that, you know, in my household, oldest daughter's 14, youngest daughter is 1. And I will tell people, like, when we're with the 14-year-old and she's at a volleyball tournament or whatever, I will say to people, all right, in about 13 years, I don't know where you're going to be, but I'll be right back here in this gym. And I'll be trying to figure out, like, generationally what happened in 13 years and how our kids motivated. Because I think that's the big challenge. Because if we all knew, like, I know what motivates my generation of people. I know what motivates my parents' generation. I know what motivated my grandparents' generation. My grandparents, all they wanted for their kids was what? A better life, right? They were an immigrant generation. They were hardworking. They were blue-collar people. They sort of forged the identity of America. Then came the next generation, and it was a little bit more suburbia. Maybe send your kids to college was a mostly assumed thing that was going to happen. And then came my generation, which was what? All of us were expected that we were going to college and we were going to graduate. It went from, in just 2 generations... you know, education is the most important thing and damn it, you are going to college. Like, that's not even a question. I don't think, Gliss, for your kids or my kids, it's not, are you going to college? The question will be, what the hell is college going to cost by the time they get there? And maybe there'll be a correction back where people go, well, maybe there becomes a breaking point where it doesn't make sense to go to college. I don't know. I don't know where it's all headed. But this millennial generation, and your avocado spread or whatever it is, your toast or whatever, they're all walking around here with their avocado spread. Good luck to you. All right, coming up, we're going to talk some recruiting. Also, Greg Biggins will be stopping by to talk about what it is with facilities. Is it enough just to have a facility that doesn't embarrass you in college athletics? What is the next thing? Because it was uniforms, it was playing fast, it's facilities. What comes next? That's here. You got the Bald Faced Truth radio show.
The Bald Faced Truth on 1029 and 750, The Game.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that's more important than your sports viewing habit might be just your family's television viewing habit, period. Like, I think your kids come before your TV habit. Some people would disagree with that, but I think you got to take care of your kids before you take care of your get your fix of Code Black or The Amazing Race. By the way, both Code Black and Amazing Race are among those shows that got renewed. CBS has Code Black, The Amazing Race as well. Law & Order SVU. Law & Order is on season 19. I don't know. What is it about Law & Order that people love so much? What are you watching, by the way, on TV that I need to be watching? Blacklist, James Spader, that's renewed. NCIS on CBS, that's the least surprising renewal of the year. The Big Bang Theory is renewed as well. Grey's Anatomy got renewed. Grey's Anatomy, like, it's like it's been on so long. It's like that they are. It's not just Meredith Grey; they're graying. And aren't they out of story ideas on Grey's Anatomy? Like when they brought the guy in and he had the bomb in his chest cavity, I was like, "That's it. They've run out of ideas. They've done it all." But they are renewing Grey's Anatomy on ABC, so that's renewed. Survivor is renewed. That makes sense to me. I think that show will go on forever. MacGyver on CBS, the revival of the oldie but goodie, back for season two. The Girlfriend Experience on Stars. This series I have not seen, but it's described about as a series about high-end female escorts. So I think we're going to need to check this out. Westworld on HBO. I got three episodes into Westworld, and I thought it was really interesting because it's an amusement park that's populated by robots. And basically you come there to go through your, you know, live out a fantasy or whatever, and the robots are starting to figure it out. Thought that was really interesting. This Is Us on NBC. Wow. I got to give... did you see This Is Us on NBC? If you haven't, you missed out. Go back and watch the series. Really well done. Good writing, good acting, makes you think, makes you laugh, makes you cry more. This Is Us is back for another season, got renewed on NBC. 13 Reasons Why, unfortunately, got renewed. This is the Netflix series. It's been a breakout hit with the young kids. I think it's it sort of romanticizes suicide and doesn't give you any kind of real life applications. So I don't like it as a parent. Also, The Americans on FX got renewed. Friend of the show, Kelly O'Coyne, who plays a character in that show, is back. Game of Thrones is coming back. Softcore Thrones is coming back. Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD. What's with Chicago? And NBC, by the way, has all three of those shows. Hawaii Five-0 is back. Modern Family is forever. This is it got renewed for two seasons. That's how good Modern Family is. Scandal is back. Scandal was like so impossibly over the top, right? Except now we're looking at the White House and we're like, oh, Scandal's totally believable with everything that's going on in the White House. I'm not bringing politics into the show, though. We're not going to do that. You know why? Because I polled you and 86% of the audience said, no politics in my sports. And I said, okay, I won't do politics for a while. The Voice, I like the talent shows. Like American Idol's coming back on a different network. The Voice is going on. I like America's Got Talent. I like those shows. What else is coming back? The Top Chef is coming back. Fear of the Walking Dead is coming back. Brockmire, if you're not watching it, Brockmire got a second inning. So it's coming back. I got through all seven episodes of the first series there. Hank Azaria, really good and a fun show. What else is coming back? How to Get Away with Murder. What I'm realizing is how much crap there is on TV. Fresh Off the Boat. Fresh Off the Boat, ABC, one of their family comedies, coming back for season four. ABC, king of family comedies. Blackish, season four of Blackish is coming up. They got renewed. I like Blackish. I like Blackish way more than Fresh Off the Boat. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT, and tell me what you're watching. And it brings me to my next topic, because I think there's a sports bent in what you would renew and what you wouldn't when it comes to sports. For example, the TNT show with Kenny and Shaq after the games, the download show that, you know, inside the NBA, the feuding, all that, I'll renew that all day. I think it's a great show. And you've got Charles Barkley part of it. You've got Kenny part of that. You've got Shaq in there. Ernie Johnson sort of mediating. And it gets off the rail a little bit. And I like that about that. But what in sports would you cancel? Because there were a lot of shows that, you know, got their papers for the 2017-2018 season. When you talk about cancellations. And so what would you cancel when it comes to sports? Would you cancel Thursday Night Football? I would. I would drop Thursday Night Football in a heartbeat. I think it's bad for the league. I think we have too much going on. I think it waters down Monday Night Football. Because among the shows canceled, Fox canceled Scream Queens. It canceled Sleepy Hollow. It canceled Rosewood. Last Man Standing on ABC is done. Two Broke Girls on CBS is done. The Odd Couple's done. Making History on Fox is done. Doubt is done. American Crime on ABC, done. The Outsiders, done. Secrets and Lies, The Nick, Training Day, Rush Hour, Notorious, all of those canceled. What would you cancel in the sports viewing world? You tell me at 503-417-7575, and I'll tell you as well. I'm canceling Thursday Night Football if I'm in charge of what gets canceled and what's renewed. I'm renewing Monday Night Football, but I don't like when they do the doubleheader. I want one game on Monday night. I want one game on Sunday night. Every other game is going to be played Sunday. I don't want Thursday Night Football. I don't want a Saturday game. That Saturday is for college football. Friday is for high school football. Thursday is for great television. Teams that play Thursday night, we all know the games are duds. Anyway, it waters down the product, and we're complaining all the time about our time these days, how little time we have and how much sports there are out there. I know in my household, last night we watched two episodes of Blackish that were DVR'd. The 11-year-old in the household wanted to see Blackish. I was down for it. We watched it. It was good. The kid went off to college. Then we did, I was hoping to see Brockmeyer, but I realized I was out of episodes. Then we did an episode of Homeland that was in the can from season 6. I'm so far behind. But I don't want to see, like, on a Tuesday night or a Thursday night, I don't want to see a football game. I don't want to even see a college game on a Thursday night. Maybe I'm a purist, but what would you cancel and what would you renew as a sports fan? Because I'm renewing Inside the NBA. I'm canceling Thursday Night Football. You tell me your suggestions at 503-417-7575. Gliss, I'm going to ask you as well. What do you enjoy? He's a producer of the show if you don't know him. I want to know what he's watching. Kiki, who is normally here, she's a big Cubs fan. But I just remember growing up watching WGN and then watching TBS and the Braves and getting that sort of force-fed to me. And the Cubs, it was more lovable because they were losers. But the Braves, it was like they just had bad uniforms and the players weren't that good either. And Kiki, though, today, by the way, is out because not because she's sick, but her dog is sick. So she's taking care of her animal. And I told her, go take care of Clyde. I'm going to ask Gliss what he's watching as well. But we'll go out to the phone lines. I do have two lines open at 503-417-7575. Tell me what you're watching and tell me what you're canceling when it comes to your sports viewing experience. Since the networks are doing it, we're going to do it too. Shane's in Milwaukee. Lead us off, Shane.
Hey, I'm definitely keeping Thanksgiving Day football.
Yes. How many games, though? How many games do you want?
I like the two.
Okay.
And then I'm canceling the ping pong lottery NBA whatever that was.
That's today.
That was awful.
Yeah, that's going to happen again today. Remember, draft lottery hell is what I call it.
Yeah, God forbid us all.
I don't like, I think there's too many bowl games, so I'm going to cancel arbitrarily maybe 5 early bowl games as part of my renewal and cancellation policy. I'm also going to cancel on Christmas Eve, the NBA trying to own Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Too many games. Can I just get 2 games? I find myself going, like, what are they? Which game am I supposed to watch? Why are they programming? Who are they programming to? Is Portland going to be involved in this or not? Bliss, give me your sports cancellation and renewal.
I absolutely hate Thursday night football, not only because of the quality of play, but also just the I'm a fantasy football player. I always avoid playing anybody from Thursday night football. So that's what I would cancel as well.
Why don't you like that on fantasy league?
You just can't trust them. They underperform, and they've kind of studied this, that the results are just not as good. The level of play is not as high.
Even on I'm going to cancel back-to-backs. Can I do that? Is that beyond my... Now I'm the commissioner of the NBA and not a TV person.
Yeah, I don't know that's going to fly.
How about this? How about I say to the league, no back-to-back NBA game can ever be aired on television. If you're playing on the second of a back-to-back, you do it in the privacy of your own arena.
I would agree with that. I think they could spread them out a little bit. Maybe they could cut down on back-to-backs at least.
I mean, the data is there. It says that the teams shoot at a lower percentage. They don't dunk as much. The play is not as efficient when it's the second of a back-to-back. Same goes for Thursday night football. We've seen it. And the league's looked at, like, oh, should we give everybody a bye? Should we, you know? But worse yet is, like, how about the games that are being broadcast on Twitter only? Or the games in London at, like, I go to turn on the TV and it's like way too early for a game to be on. And my fantasy league guy is playing in a game in London at like 7 a.m. And I'm like, no. If I would have known this, I didn't realize the game was in London. I turn on the TV and the Chiefs are playing. They're playing like in front of nobody in London. And I'm like, I never would have played my guys here. There's so much crap on TV. And I think we're going to deal with this a little bit on tomorrow's show, I believe, with rights fees. And we're going to talk about how television is affecting and shaping the future of college athletics. But there's just so much with Monday night football, Thursday night football, Sunday football all day, Sunday night football, college games on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so during the college football NFL season, you know, you get Monday night football. Tuesdays, we might get off, you know, maybe. Wednesday, we start getting a little hinky because there's a game we don't recognize. We're like at the gym and we look up and there's a game where like Toledo's playing, you know, in some Mid-American Conference game. And then Thursday night, it really starts with the NFL. And the rhythm has just been lost to the season, the break that we get. See, there's a reason why you get one birthday in a year, right? You don't get a birthday every month. Why? If I give you a birthday every month, it loses any kind of value. It's not special. It's like people who celebrate their relationship and they go, oh, it's our 3-month anniversary. You're like, get back to me in 12 months, or that's not really even a relationship. You know, it's our 6-month anniversary. You start doing that, then what happens in a year? It's not that special. We need milestones in our lives. That's why we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can't invent a fourth meal. You try it. They try to do it. I'm not partaking in that because it makes breakfast, lunch, and dinner less special. We need these milestones in our day. We need one birthday a year, one anniversary a year. You need 3 meals in a day. You brush your teeth in the morning. You brush your teeth at night. Come on. We need milestones in our day. So you start giving me football on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all day Sunday, all night Sunday. By the time we get back around, it's anybody curious why we aren't watching anymore? It does have to do with the fact that we can watch games differently, but I also think there's saturation here. 503-417-7575. Tony, you're in Portland. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, John. Hey, the only non-sports program that I even watch would be the Goldbergs. I don't know if you ever catch that, but it's kind of like us growing up time, you know. Have you seen that one?
I haven't, but I'm looking it up right now. It's on ABC.
Check it out. It's pretty, yeah, pretty good. Did they renew that or did they cancel it?
It's renewed. It's got 96% approval rating, by the way.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, what I am going to cancel on is any game where the superstars are sitting out. And I'm on the other side of the fence, man. I like Thursday Night Football. I'm going to renew that.
What?
I'm busy on
Why?
The weekend.
What are you doing?
I'm busy. I got, you know, my we've talked. My 12-year-old's doing lacrosse, and that's Saturday games. Sometimes that's two games. She's playing on, you know, a silver and bronze team.
Yeah.
Second year. And Sunday is skills camp. And, you know, we got chores, man. It's hard to sit down anymore and watch football. I mean, I used to do it in my 20s, but I can't do it in my 40s.
Yeah, I hear you. Here's the problem with the kids. Don't even get me started on this. He's talking about how busy he is because his kids' lives are busy. It didn't used to be that way. As a kid, our Little League season went like 15 games, 12 games. When I got to high school, yeah, we'd play 20 or 22 in the summer. These kids are playing like 70 games a year. And then practices, and then private lessons, and then workouts with a trainer. And I'm like, no wonder these kids are all walking around stressed out and exhausted. My kid, she's 14. You know what I told her? I said, I don't care how you do in school in the last month. Take it off, because you know what? You're getting to high school, and it's about to get really serious for you. She's like, you know, damn near straight A student, and way more responsible than I am. So she's just the kind of kid where I can tell her, hey, it's okay to coast a little bit right here, but she won't. And I think that's part of the problem, because I think by the time these kids get to high school, they're exhausted. And I know, because I'm picking her up and dropping her off. She has a practice this Thursday. She practices until 9:30 at night. She's 14 years old. I'm like, man, 9:30 at night, you should be, you know, staring at the back of your eyelids. That's what you should be doing at 9:30 at night. These kids are busier than I am. I have three jobs. These kids are running around. I don't know what it's going to be like. I just think they're all going to be stressed out. We talked about the generational thing. But as a result, Tony, who calls in, he likes Thursday night football because his Saturdays and Sundays are consumed with lacrosse and his kids. So he, at least he's getting some football. I say too bad, Tony. I'm canceling it. You got to clear up some time on your weekend. And watch a sporting event when it used to be. I just remember during the week, we'd get them one Monday night game. And then what happened at school? We'd talk all week long about what was going to happen the next Sunday. And it was all week, like, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, trash talking and strategizing. And then by the time the game came, there was anticipation. We couldn't wait for Sunday. I'd have my jersey on. The channel was tuned in. And these were the days when we only had two channels. You won't be able to relate to this if you were a millennial. We only had two channels. And my parents, we had an antenna on the roof. And we had to move the antenna to get the football game. And we didn't have a little rotor or some kind of machine that would move the antenna. What we had was me. So I was like 11. My parents told me to climb up on the roof. Yeah, that's what parents used to do. Nowadays, you can't even think about getting on the roof. Parents would be like, that's too dangerous. They'd get me up on the roof. My dad would get in the living room. He's monitoring the television. My mom would be like right outside the sliding glass doors of the living room. She's the relay. And I was the rotor. And I'll move that thing. And I would move it until it got in perfect reception. And dad would go, right there! Or no, back a little! And then mom would go, right there! Back a little. And that's how we tuned into the football game. Nowadays, you just flip around, you go to the red zone, you get every game. No wonder you have attention deficit disorder. You can't even watch a game. I'm just saying. All right, our next guest is going to talk college football recruiting, Greg Biggins. He's the go-to guy nationally. And I had a chance to tour Oregon State's football facility and was impressed by it. I know it's not what Oregon's is, though, and Greg Biggins covers national recruiting for Fox Sports from California. What does he see from 10,000 feet when it comes to facilities, the Pac-12 conference, kids? Willie Taggart's recruiting classes, will they materialize, or is this just a lot of energy and buzz and hype early? We're going to talk about all those things with Greg Biggins. And frankly, I'm going to ask him an important question. I'm going to ask Greg Biggins whether the 11 other teams in the Pac-12 conference that don't have Oregon's facilities, whether the aim there is just to be good enough. Just to be good enough so it can't become a negative recruiting tool. Greg Biggins on recruiting. He's next. You got the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Make no excuses. Blame no one. Do something.
We will continue to live by those beliefs as we return this football program to the lofty status that it deserves.
That was Willie Taggart and his three coaching tenets in his first press conference. He's been on fire when it comes to the 2018 class, the commitments that he's getting from high school juniors. Meanwhile, I walked around Oregon State's football facility on Saturday, and Gary Anderson, the coach at Oregon State, gave me a tour, walked me through the facility. It's really nice. And what I came away with was this feeling that there's Oregon's facilities, and then everybody else who's competing against Oregon is just trying to have their facilities be nice enough where they can't be negatively recruited against for them. Does that make any sense? So I wanted to get Greg Biggins on, Fox Sports and Scout.com, national recruiting expert, to kind of give us the lay of the land nationally and maybe look at what the Oregon schools are doing and what does he see nationally. And he joins us now. Greg, thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
So I walked through Oregon State's facility, and it's really nice. I mean, it's nicer than a lot of the NFL teams that I covered 15 years ago. What are you seeing with facilities in general across college sports, and how much is it mattering when you have a place like Oregon versus the others?
You know, I'm kind of old school in the sense that I think the whole facility thing is the most overplayed, overused recruiting tool there is. Now, I say that, and I don't want to contradict myself. It is important, and it's a big selling point. But the reality is, you know, back when USC was rolling under Pete Carroll, they had the worst facilities in the country. If you win, players are going to come. And even going, you know, we'll speak on Oregon for a second. You know, they have unbelievable Star Trek-like facilities. I've been there. I've seen it. Love it. It's amazing. It blows your mind. But people used to always say, oh, it's because they're doing these facilities. That's why they're winning. This is when they first kind of started to get things rolling.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, no, I go, kids are going to go there because they're winning football games. Kids don't want to, they don't care how nice a facility is unless you win football games, unless you have coaches that you build relationships with, unless you can sell academics, unless the parents feel comfortable there. Those are always going to be the top four or five things. Now, again, great facilities is definitely an added bonus, but the reality is that that's fourth or fifth behind, you know, playing time, behind winning, behind relationships, behind how hard you're being recruited, behind comfortability, if that's even a word. So, but to stay in the topic, you know, Oregon does have very nice facilities, 100%. Yeah. I think they're amazing. But I, you know, honestly, again, you know, Oregon State, I think every school in the Pac-12, they're all about upgrading. They're all trying to compete with one another, so they can't sell that. But, you know, end of the day, I never heard of a kid say, oh, I chose this school because of the facilities. It's a bonus, but it's not going to be the one, two, or three reason why they chose that school.
Greg Biggins is with us. He covers recruiting for Fox and for Scout.com. Nationally, Oregon is doing really well with Willie Taggart, getting some nice commitments from juniors. Is that just a little bit of buzz, a little bit of hype, or is there staying power there when you see high school kids make that verbal commitment?
You know what? I want to be able to say there's staying power, but I think, you know, shoot, you cover this as well as I do. We both know commitments at this early stage don't really mean a whole lot. It's almost like this is my current leader when you commit now.
Yeah.
And if very rarely do you see a player commit and not take trips. So the whole idea of, you know, commitments being, you know, kind of lock solid. It just, unfortunately, it doesn't happen. I personally hate it, you know, when I see kids commit and I'm going to take trips still. Well, why even commit then? You know, it's the whole, you know, getting engaged and still dating other girls thing. So, you know, I know Washington has a pretty hard, fast rule. Hey, you know, don't commit here if you want to take trips still. And, but that's just kind of how it is. Again, it's unfortunate. You know, basketball doesn't have that issue. You know, it just football wise, it's the only sport that that you see. Baseball, basketball, that's the major sport where kids commit, and it just it doesn't really mean a whole lot. Now these kids that commit to Oregon, you know, your Steve Stevens, your Adrian Jacksons, your Dawson Jaramillo, I think those guys are all really solid. I'd be a little surprised if those guys were to flip. But again, it's recruiting, and you're never surprised by anything. But between now and February, or God, I guess you can say now and December. Long time to go, but these are all really, really good football players and very solid commitments.
Is it then put more pressure, because we just don't have proof of performance yet with Willie Taggart, does it put more pressure on his first season to at least be palatable?
Not at all, because here's what he can sell. You know, hey, these aren't even my players. When I get you on campus, shoot, mm-hmm. watch out, right? That's going to be the selling point. Now, obviously, you want to win. You want to win games, and Coach Taggart and that staff have been extremely aggressive, you know, getting after it and just being on campuses. And that whole staff, you know, they're young and exciting with a ton of energy, and they're doing a phenomenal job when it comes to recruiting. So, but still, you want to see results. If you're a kid, if you're a parent, if you're a high school coach, you obviously want to see results. Not necessarily think you have to, you know, go 10-0, you know, but you at least want to look like, you know what you're doing. You at least want to look like, okay, this team is well coached. They play hard. They have a system in place. You want to see all that. But if they go, you know, 7-5 this year, they're still going to have a great recruiting class. Because, again, you can still sell, hey, you know, we got early playing time for you. You still want to come here.
We're talking to Greg Biggins, Fox Sports, Scout.com, national recruiting expert. The buzz around Oregon, is it similar to anything else that you see in the country? Are there other programs who have that kind of momentum, or is it a little bit surprising given their 4-8 season?
That's a good question. I would say, you know, I would say Miami has kind of been a surprise. I just kind of sounds funny because I probably should know more, but I haven't checked our national recruiting rankings. It's too early for me to do that. But I know there was a time when I think they had like maybe one of the top one or two or three classes in the country, and obviously, you know, you kind of expect the usual, you know, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, the usual suspects. But, you know, Miami is doing extremely well. You know, Mark Richt obviously has a great reputation at Georgia, and I think Miami's going to do really well. But, you know, after that, you know, I would say Oregon kind of has been one of the more national surprises. Nebraska, too. You know, they're doing really well. They always seem to recruit pretty well. But, you know, to be, you know, top 10 this early in the year is something you don't really see from Nebraska. But yeah, I think Oregon with the buzz and not just the, you know, with the early commitments, you know, I think they have what, 8 or 9 guys now, just that was that 24-hour period or a 40-hour period. They signed almost all those guys. It was just kind of a fun, exciting thing. And, you know, they've really done a nice job when they get the kids on campus, whether it be an unofficial visit or even the spring game. And I think Oregon, you know, they understand, you know, they have to recruit a little more aggressively than, say, a USC, UCLA when it comes to recruiting the Southern California players. They know that they can't get these guys on campus as often as those schools do. So I've talked to kids and also those coaches, high school coaches, and when they visit Oregon, they almost make it like an official visit, not an unofficial. I mean, they're doing everything that you would do on an official visit. They're touring the campus, seeing the facilities, the dorms, academic people. They're meeting high-up people. So they're really showing the kids a great time, and that's kind of wowing a lot of the players.
Greg, when USC for years was able to recruit based on reputation, based on Southern California success, they had the Heisman winners. What's USC selling now?
You know, same thing. You know, it's funny. I'll talk to kids, and I'll say, hey, you know, USC, what do you like most? He goes, oh, I grew up watching Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart. And people have been saying that for years, but it's funny now these kids are saying it. And I'm like, okay, you know that you're probably 3 years old when Reggie Bush played at USC.
Yeah.
So it's funny. You can still sell. I mean, USC, like you mentioned, they still sell themselves. They could go 1-10. They're still going to have a great recruiting class because, you know, these kids are just raised, especially if we're talking out here, you know, where I'm from, you know, Southern California. You know, if the kids can say, yeah, I grew up watching them. What they really mean is I grew up in a home that watched USC football. My aunts and uncles, my parents, that was always the school they wanted to go to. So when you get that offer from USC, it still moves the needle, no matter how well they do on the field. And then you throw in, you know, how they finished last year. This year they're going to be rated really high in the preseason. They have a Heisman candidate in Sam Darnold. So, you know, again, like you mentioned, easy place to sell. And they're still going to sell a location. They're selling tradition. They're selling a lot. The big thing I've heard them use more than I ever have in the past, the last 4 or 5 years, is the alumni support, the networking, the after football. You know, if you want to live in Southern California, you know, what better degree than a USC degree? So that's something that they're really pushing hard over the last few years as well.
Clay Helton, is he the right personality to be in charge of that program?
You know, so far, you know, small sample size, obviously, but so far, so good. You know, it's funny, after the first 4 or 5 weeks, you know, everybody out here, fire Helton. You know, they got to get a new coach. He's in over his head. All of a sudden, you know, they kind of start to make that run and you know, win a Rose Bowl. And now all of a sudden it's, you know, shoot, greatest coach ever. And that's kind of how it is, you know. And again, being a Southern California guy in all sports, whether it's, you know, Lakers or Angels or LA King, I mean, it's a front running area. And if you're doing well, you know, it's the greatest. And if things aren't going well, it's fire everybody. So, you know, the thing I don't think people, you know, realize, but when Helton was an assistant, extremely good recruiter, very aggressive, very well-liked, you know, hungry. He was a grinder. So I think as a head coach, he's going to recruit well, simply because, again, it's SC, but, you know, he's a very aggressive, active recruiter. Most head coaches don't really get after it that much, but I think Helton, he definitely still does. So, you know, he's going to have more talent on the field than everybody else. And, you know, I think when it comes to, you know, when it comes to football, you know, if you have better players than the other team, you're going to win a lot of games. And as long as you kind of don't get in the way and you have good assistants, which I think he does right now. So I think the jury's still out, but so far I think Helton has a chance. I think he really does to do well there.
I think the conference needs USC, and it also needs UCLA to be good, to have that sort of sex appeal that, you know, where we can say the Pac-12 is, you know, it's got multiple teams that are good with Stanford there, and if Oregon can get back, and it's got a good solid base with Utah and Colorado coming on. But UCLA, is the window closed for them? Are they losing that battle in Southern California now?
I mean, I don't want to – I would say they're losing the battle. I don't think the window is, you know, totally closed, but I do think – you know, when USC had those 3 years of sanctions and only can take 15 scholarships, and, you know, I think UCLA had a great opportunity to really kind of elevate themselves. And, you know, I think they did beat USC, you know, Mora's first couple years, and they really had a chance, but it just kind of hasn't worked out. Obviously, they had the horrible season last year. So, you know, I think right now, you know, at least from a recruiting standpoint, USC definitely has surged ahead. UCLA has a chance. I mean, again, it's UCLA. They're going to have better players than almost every team they play, just because they recruit out here and kids don't care about records. They just want to stay close to home. So UCLA is going to have better players. They just got to get coached up. They got to motivate them. You know, that's kind of one of the understated things about, you know, recruiting players out here, is sometimes it's hard to get all these high 5 and 4 stars who have their eyes on the NFL and aren't really thinking about winning college games. It's hard to keep those guys motivated to play hard for you. And they have agents in their ear already. They have so many hangers-on out here. It happens football and basketball. So I think, you know, Helton, Moore, they really need to get those kids to focus and buy in. So, you know, like you, I agree. I think it's fun for Pac-12 football. I'm a West Coast homer, so I'd love to see USC and UCLA both doing good, and Oregon to be good, and Stanford's not going anywhere. You know, the Huskies aren't going anywhere. I think it'd be nice to get one of the Arizona schools to do well. I would love to see that. So just because I'm so tired of hearing – you know, about how great the SEC is every single year. So it'd be fun to see the Pac-12, you know, really as a power conference.
Arizona State always baffles me, because I feel like I walk around there and I go, this should be a destination place. It doesn't have the problems that you have in Pullman or Corvallis or even, you know, Utah in Colorado. I think that Arizona – why isn't Arizona State better?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because, you know, when he first got there, I thought, dude, Todd Graham can coach. You know, right? I mean, we watch those teams, and I'm like, man, they just look like – and I think if you watch a team, they just – sometimes you can just tell if a team looks like they know what they're doing and they're disciplined and well-coached. And for years, you know, you saw ASU kind of being – I don't want to use the word renegade program, but you saw, you know, the Vontaze Burfict's of the world with the personal fouls. All of a sudden, Todd Graham gets in there, and and they lead the conference, I think, or up there in terms of fewest penalties. And I like the offensive scheme. You know, they've lost some really good assistant coaches over the last couple of years. And I don't know, I'm not close enough to the program to know how big of a case that is. I know, again, Mike Norvell was a heck of an OC. You know, he's at Memphis, and even defensively, you know, they're so attack minded. You know, that risk, high risk, high reward thing, you know, it looks great when you get tackles for loss, but it definitely hurts you when you give up big plays. So, but I think they've recruited well, and I do think they have everything in place in terms of the facility and the support and all that. They should be, I think, a perennial, you know, 8-9 win team. That's probably maybe overselling it, but I totally agree with you. I think ASU has everything in place to be really successful.
The college recruiting, the football rule changes that we saw come down in April, contact at practice limited to once per preseason, recruiting calendar now including the early signing period in December. What do you make of all this? Are these good changes, or is it going to get tougher for kids?
That's a good question. I'm kind of just watching in anticipation to see what's really going to change. You know, I think the biggest one is going to be, you know, the December early signing period. You know, I think there's a couple ways to look at it. You know, if you're a kid, I don't see what your motivation is to sign in December, because, I mean, how many coaching changes, most coaching changes happen between December and February, right? So, you know, do you want to risk signing a couple months early just to get it over with and then not be 100% sure if your head coach is going to be, you know, still be there? And obviously we've seen that it's not too hard for some of these guys to get out of the letter of intent. But, I mean, do you really want to hassle with that? And, you know, so, and then also, I mean, a lot of times these players that maybe commit to, again, that don't want to use the term lesser program, but say they commit to a school, you know, like a San Jose State or Fresno State. Well, a lot of times we'll see those kids all of a sudden getting Pac-12 offers or a Boise State offer, which I consider Boise State like a Pac-12 offer. You know, those kids get those offers in late December, January. You know, do you sign early with your school and kind of risk, you know, maybe not getting that big offer? So I think that's the negative. I guess the plus is, you know, you sign early, you lock your spot in, and you don't run the risk of one of these programs maybe kicking you out the door when they do get a bigger player to commit. But I feel like that happens less frequently than the kid gets the big offer and has a chance to now go to maybe a, you know, a bigger, better school for him. So that one, I'm really curious to see how much change is really going to happen, if players are going to really commit early or if they're going to still wait till that February signing date.
We haven't talked about Oregon State. Gary Anderson is selling authenticity, toughness, good handshake. What do you see when you look at Oregon State as a program?
I think going in the right direction. I think you mentioned the facility upgrades, but again, that's not going to alone get kids. It's you got to win games. But, you know, from talking to people, you know, they're out here hard in Southern California making a really good impression. And, you know, it's always going to be hard for Oregon State to come into Southern California and beat out USC, UCLA. It's going to be hard to win a whole lot of head-to-head battles with other Northwest schools, Oregon, Washington. But, you know, I think if you're Oregon State, you want to be able to win those battles against Utah, against Colorado, against Arizona, ASU. And if you do that, God, there's so much talent out here. I think they got a chance. You know, Oregon State has always, you know, traditionally done well in Texas. You know, I think this year, you know, Talanoa Hufanga is really – that's a key guy for them, obviously. He's a national kid with offers from Bama and everybody else, Notre Dame's of the world. I keep hearing, you know, this kid wants to stay close to home. Does that mean Oregon? Does that mean Oregon State? Obviously, Oregon State's even closer, but that's that one guy who could be a difference maker. I think he's a really good football player. But, you know, so far, so good. You know, they got three commitments right now. I like all three of the kids they've gotten from. So, you know, it's just – you got to just coach and develop. You know, it's not basketball. You don't ever have football players that can go straight to the draft out of high school. You got to coach them up and develop them. And I think if Oregon State can do that, you know, I think they got a chance. I think – they definitely have a chance if they can just, you know, continue to recruit, develop, and hopefully win some games that way.
Greg Biggins, you're the best. I appreciate you, man.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Fox Sports national recruiting expert Greg Biggins. Oregon State's doing something interesting, and I'll use the kid at Lake Oswego High School as an example. Jake Ducard at Lake Oswego High School had committed to Arizona State with a baseball scholarship. And The Arizona State coaching staff's a little wobbly right now. Nobody quite knows, is that guy going to have his job next year or whatever? And meanwhile, Dukart's been playing in 7-on-7 leagues and developing as a football player, and he's a quarterback there. And suddenly, you know, the kid might want to play football. Oregon's looking at him. Oregon State does something interesting. Gary Anderson gets him on campus. Dukart tours the facility about 10 days ago, and Oregon State makes an early offer. And I think that's your angle of your Oregon State. We see something we like, we make an offer. We make the first offer to a baseball guy saying, look, if you're going to play football, we'd like to have you here. And I think when Gary Anderson sees something he likes, he jumps on it early with sincerity and authenticity, and that's his play. That's his angle. If you missed any of that interview, I'll post it on SoundCloud, iTunes. We do that for you daily. Leave it here. We've got some news in front of you. What's the latest in sports? You find out next.
Here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
New York Times story just hit Twitter. I haven't really got into this President Trump, FBI director spat because I don't want politics in the sports show. I don't. Like I used to say, hey, I'm going to talk about what I'm going to talk about. But right now, I have an exhaustion with this President Trump stuff, but apparently there's a memo out there that President Trump asked the FBI director to shut down the investigation into his former national security advisor. Basically, it shows that the president was trying to influence an FBI investigation. This isn't going to end well for anybody. You know that? It's not going to end well. It didn't end well for Comey. It's not going to end well for Trump. It's probably not going to end well for America. But I'm not going to allow politics to bleed into this as much as it wants to bleed into this. I thought Greg Biggins was great talking about recruiting just a few minutes ago. I thought Mel Renfro was really good early in the show. Mel Renfro got a car, okay? You want to talk about recruiting? Mel Renfro is, last time he came on the show, he revealed that his father got a 57 Chevy and he flipped his commitment from Oregon State to Oregon. This time he went one further. He added in that he also got a Chevy. I don't know if you caught that, but it's like Mel is coming on the show to kind of, he's letting it go a little bit. He's coming on and maybe he's saying, hey, it's time to talk about some of this stuff. I love that Mel Renfro was so candid, so good. I tweeted out a link to the interview, but Alabama Adriana, who is a production assistant here, does a great job podcasting the show every day. And you should subscribe to the BFT radio show on SoundCloud and iTunes. Like, and listen to a podcast like, what, 400,000 people did last year? So join the party. If you missed Mel Renfro or you want to share it with a friend, you can do that with a touch of the button by subscribing on your iPhone to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show podcast or SoundCloud, iTunes, whatever it is, wherever you get your podcast. So when you're on an airplane next time, probably not a United flight, but when you're on an airplane and you want to listen to the show, you have it at your fingertips. Get it right there. Tomorrow on the show, Oregon softball coach Mike White will be joining us. He'll be on at 1 o'clock tomorrow. You see how that works? Gliss, the producer, booked Mike White, and I got an alert on my phone. He didn't even talk to me about it. It just popped up on my phone. Mike White show, 1 o'clock tomorrow. All right, Mike White will be joining us to talk about the number 3 seed Oregon Ducks women's softball team in the NCAA tournament. We'll be talking about that with him. Biggins was great on the show, too, just a few minutes ago, talking about recruiting. He said a couple little things that I want to touch base on. First and foremost, I was under the impression that these high school junior commitments, because of the new I'll sign in December rules, now there is a signing period, an early signing period in December, begins this December for the first time. You can sign early if you're a high school kid. You can be on campus in the spring, and Willie Taggart and the Ducks are having a red hot, you know, early signing period or early commitment. And if you're going to have people who are going to commit in December and sign, than, you know, these high school juniors, which I always roll my eyes when the high school juniors make a commitment. And the people who cover recruiting on a daily basis, God bless you all. God bless you, Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian and Justin Hopkins and Matt Prem down in Eugene. Everybody does a good job and they have to deal with these kids. I just dip my toes into it once in a while. I'll talk to one of these kids or we'll interview them on the show. And, you know, I love what the kids have to say, but I'm always kind of rolling my eyes going, do these guys know what they want? They're like 16, 17 years old. And like Biggins said, very rarely do you see a player who commits and then doesn't go and take trips everywhere else. Be like getting married at 16, but continuing to date for a while, you know? And then he talked to USC. And we keep waiting for USC to kind of get it together, but he says they could go 1-10 and they'd have a great recruiting class. I think USC's time may be coming again. And everybody keeps saying that, USC, oh, they'll be back, they'll be back. It's really interesting, too, because I saw the data where Notre Dame paid Charlie Weiss like $45 million to go 500. They finally had that come out. We're going to talk about this tomorrow, but the broadcast rights fees that have fueled the pay increases for college coaches and have fueled facility building, that day is coming to an end because broadcast rights on games, those rights fees are going to start to wane. And the college athletic departments know it. And they know it, and they're looking at their ticket revenue now, and they're going, we got to get back to selling tickets now. We can't sell TV anymore. But I think it's really interesting to kind of look at what coaches made. And Charlie Weiss, in particular at Notre Dame, got paid a whole bunch of money not to win games. USC, though, feels like their time's coming. Also in Oregon State, you know, he's talking about Oregon State trying to get into Southern California and win battles against USC and UCLA. And Gary Anderson would probably punch him in the face for this, but he said if you're Oregon State, you want to win the battles against Utah and Colorado, not USC and UCLA. And Gary Anderson probably would put him in a headlock because Gary Anderson's like, nonsense. We're going to be who we are. We're going to sell commitment. We're going to sell authenticity. We're going to sell toughness. And by the way, we want kids who want to be a part of something bigger than just themselves. So what he's going to sell is, hey, we're going to be the anti-UCLA and USC. Maybe they try to get a kid out of Southern California that doesn't have that mentality. I don't know. I'm fascinated to see where it goes, and I think we're at an interesting time in college athletics. Normally, Kiki reads the news here. We're not going to do that because she's got problems with a dog. Instead, I'm going to give you three stories that I think should have led our newscast earlier. And Curtis Rogers, who does the updates here in Portland, does a great job picking out the stories. But there are a few stories here in the Portland area that caught my attention, and I always look at the top trending stories and what's going on in the news because sometimes I will delve outside of sports. But apparently there was a daycare that had a problem with insecticide. I don't know if you saw this story, but a Coos Bay Daycare Center shut down on Monday in the aftermath of an insecticide spraying incident. A half a dozen children and two staff members had inflamed eyes and breathing problems. State regulators opened an inquiry there. This is the Coos Bay Children's Academy. They have an enrollment about 80 kids, or I should say they had an enrollment of about 80 kids. Because I'm thinking parents were going to start pulling their kids out of this daycare center, whether they closed it or not. Because there are some things that you can mess around with as a consumer. Like you can dabble with Starbucks. I went down in the Starbucks line once upon a time here at the PacWest Center in Portland and downtown where this show is broadcast from. There's a Starbucks in the lobby. It's pretty busy because it's across the street from City Hall. And I will get into the building and then I will mosey down and get coffee. And if I don't get coffee, I can't think. So I go down and there's a line on this day that I got in line and that I went into the Starbucks. And so I got in line. And I got up to the front of the line and I ordered my iced coffee And the lady, the barista, apologized to me and said, I'm sorry, but we have no brewed coffee today. And I was just really dismayed. It just disheveled me, and it just totally derailed my morning because I was like, damn, I could walk like a block to Seattle's Best. I could probably walk within a block or two and find five other coffee shops. But I got to get my fix here. So I went back upstairs, and I thought, well, surely they'll get the machine fixed. I'll just come back down later. So I waited about an hour. Then I went back downstairs, because you can do this with your coffee. And I got back in line, and I got up to the front of the line, and she said, it's still broken. And I thought to myself, this is the only place that could treat me like crap that I would come back to. You can't do that with a daycare center. And anybody who has kids will back me on this. You can't mess around with your kids' safety. You can't mess around with insecticide incidents. And apparently this Children's Academy had been cited for 6 state rule violations in less than a year of operations. So the 80 kids who were in that school, I think we're leaving regardless. You can say you shut down, but it's kind of like you saying, well, if you're breaking up with me, then I'm breaking up with you first. So that caught my eye. Coos Bay Daycare Center shut down in the aftermath of an insecticide spraying incident. Don't mess around with your kids in insecticides. And if you are having problems with insects and you're a child care facility, then maybe you ought to evaluate other ways than spraying around the kids. Meanwhile, another story about money. You might be getting some money back from the state of Oregon. Apparently, Oregon taxpayers could be getting money back from the state next year thanks to a quirky kicker law. If you paid income taxes in 2016, you will get this refund if the kicker is triggered. So what's the kicker? Well, it depends on how much you paid the state in 2016. The refund is calculated as a percentage of your Oregon tax bill. So if you made large income tax payments, you get a larger refund and vice versa. We don't know yet what the percentage will be or if the kicker will be triggered. So you don't know if you're getting it or how much you're getting, but you may be getting some money from the state of Oregon. The typical Oregonian might expect a refund of about $85. So let's just say if your adjusted gross income was less than $45,000, you're getting somewhere between $5 and $91. If your adjusted gross income was $165,000 to $45,000, you're getting somewhere between $100 to $400. And if your adjusted gross income was $165 to $368, you get $1,000, and the average person is going to get $200. So how will we know for sure? Well, you won't know until the revenue forecast on August 23rd. So mark it on your calendars. So, and by the way, the state is not going to send out an email. They're not going to send out a mailer saying you're getting a kicker. So on August 23rd, we'll mark it on our calendars here on the show. But we'll let you know if you're getting a check. Oh, and yes, there's a catch. Sorry to burst your bubble here. The state does not issue checks anymore. So if you're getting the kicker, they're just going to issue it as a credit towards taxes in 2018. Oh, everybody just went, oh, man, because there goes your summer bonus. But basically in 2018, let's say you owe the state $200. Well, then you might just owe $100. So this is not as exciting as the money in your pocket. And the kicker law, by the way, was enacted in 1980. We voted this in 1980, so thank you in 1980 if you were a taxpayer. But it's a rare law that, along with our aversion to sales tax and the law that says we can't pump our own gas, we get a kicker if the state forecast falls under what the income tax base generates. So you may be getting some money back, but not really getting money back. Another story. Did you hear the story of the dude who walked into the store with his mother? or I should say, the guy walked into a store with a severed head, and the head happened to belong to his mother. Clackamas County man is accused of decapitating his mother at their home on Mother's Day, and then going into the supermarket, where witnesses described him walking in with an 8-inch knife in one hand and a human head in the other hand. And at that point, I stopped reading the story. I just shook my head. I looked at the photo of the guy, and I went, this is like out of a movie. This is like a Brad Pitt movie. I think I saw it, called Seven. I couldn't believe it. And of course, it's the number one story. But I couldn't believe what I saw. And it's one of those stories where, like, you know, we want to just believe that everybody's got their mental health. And we want to believe that everybody has good relationships with their family members or their parents. I don't know the backstory because I only got one paragraph into the story and I said I can't read anymore. I don't like to read that stuff. I don't like to see it. It's like the video of the guy Facebook live streaming who came upon the other guy and shot him, the old gentleman. I regret that somebody showed me that video. I didn't want to see it. I want to see it. I want it in my head. I'm not saying I'm in denial of that. I don't want to know something happened, but I don't need that image in my head. And frankly, it's not even about, like, some people say, well, you shouldn't talk about it because it glorifies the crime. I'm not even saying that. I don't even want to acknowledge that that crime happened because it's so despicable and unbelievable. And I'm not even worried about, like, you know, copycat stuff and all that. I'm just saying that it's a despicable, horrible act. And I got about a paragraph into both of those stories and said, I don't want to hear it. Am I ignorant for wanting that? For not reading through the story and going, well, was there a history here? Were there other calls to the house? I look at that and I just say, there's something there that's... And then everybody was talking about it. So, yeah, I didn't want to hear it. I wanted happy news, like avocado toast. I wanted happy news, like in sports, Salt and Straw got big, you know, boost. The Salt and Straw company that is down here serving ice cream got a big investment from a New York restaurant group. That's great. And in sports, we want to hear about commitments. So, yes, I want this radio show to be your escape from the real world. And here I am bringing in the real world. So it's my bad. I also, if I can just for a second rant about what I think's going on in this city, in Portland in particular, I'm a little disturbed by the approach that law enforcement is taking with the people who are camping throughout the city. I think we should do a better job with mental illness. I think we should do a better job with homelessness. But what I don't think we should do is create a city in which the mentally ill and the homeless are left to kind of wander around the city all day and all night. And that's what we have. We've got tents everywhere along the freeway. We've got crime sprees going on along those same freeway routes. We've got, you know, I talked about it last week when somebody broke into my car. There were 11 break-ins in that area where windows got smashed. I don't know if this is going on in other parts of the state. I don't know if it's, you know, if it's just us that this is happening in. But it's almost like before we can talk homelessness, before we can talk about the transient population, I think we kind of have to do something about mental illness. And we're bad at mental illness. We're bad at treatment. We're down at programs. So we're giving everybody money back. And we're talking about a state that's saying, hey, we may be able to forecast that everybody gets a kicker. Well, I'm looking at the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I'm going, yeah, I wonder if we could say the state of Oregon could do a little better with treating, a little better with dealing, a little better with providing resources for the mentally ill. And then whoever else is wandering around the streets, then we can deal with that. But I do think mental illness is a big problem and it walks hand in hand with homelessness. But I also think there's some people out there that are just kind of riding on the coattails of that downtown. All right, that's enough politics on this sports radio show. Busy week ahead. We're going to talk on tomorrow's show with Mike White, the Oregon softball coach. We're going to talk about how the college football programs are going to have to rely on you, the season ticket holder. In particular, if you are a Duck or a Beaver fan, your college program needs you in the stadium more than ever. I'll tell you why on tomorrow's show. We'll break down what the universities are doing to lure you there, because I think they're going to have to do some things, very creative things, to get you back into the stadium. Oregon State right now, in the neighborhood of 19,000 season ticket holders. They need that number up around 25,000. At Oregon, you're about 30,000. They need that number up of another 5,000 or 6,000 as well. So what are Rob Mullins, the athletic director at Oregon, and Scott Barnes, the AD at Oregon State, what are they going to do to get you back into the stadium? We're going to talk about it and break it down tomorrow. Plus, is there great value there as a sports fan? And more of your phone calls on tomorrow's show as well. Grab the podcast of this radio program on SoundCloud and iTunes, as I said. You can tweet at me, at John Canzano, BFT. Appreciate that you're out there listening to the show. I'm not going to be one of these hosts that says, I'm not going to acknowledge the listener. I'm not going to talk about the listener. We do this show because I want to make you think. I want to make you feel. Maybe it'll make you laugh. Maybe it'll make you cry. But hopefully, you see it as an opportunity for us to share a discourse. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth.